This is the Let's Talk Wheels Radio Network.
From the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios,
here's Matt Perrault and Mike Herzing.
It's Let's Talk Wheels here on the Let's Talk Wheels Radio Network. Welcome into the show, guys, on the great day to talk about everything in the automotive space. Mike Herzing and Matt Perrault, Mike in Houston, me in Vegas. Mike's had a hell of a week. Houston's had a hell of a week. How are things, Mike? How are the boys in Houston doing?
Well, it's been great. It's been freezing cold and 7 degrees, 9 degrees. And then, you know, just a couple days ago, it was 80. So, you know, like they say in Texas, if you don't like the weather, wait a few hours. You know, the studio, boy, they had a tough there. It was no power. Then we had no internet. The network was those
down
guys. It was down for a week. And
it was awful.
And it was really tough. The streets are here. The city did really good. A lot of the folks, you know, got together and did things and saved a lot of people. But, you know, it was 100 years, you know, it's one of those 100-year storms, just like with Hurricane Harvey. And we're past it. We don't have to worry about it for another 100 years, I hope. And we're fine. You know, at Vegas. You had remember that big snowstorm y'all had a year or two ago, and you had a week's worth of, you know, week or 2 weeks of storms. You thought you left that when you left Boston, but guess what? Yeah. You didn't.
No, it's true. So. It's been weird weather here, but we're starting. This is when Vegas gets kind of funky, because in late February we get real warm, more than other people, and so one can kind of figure out, like, because Chicago and Philly and New York and Boston and these markets are all frozen till like mid May, and we get 75 degree temperatures starting in about a week, and it starts our pools open in a week
here. Oh, wow.
At the resorts. So yeah. So basically March 1st is when our summer really begins. It gets to be 75, 80 degrees very quickly. And everyone's hoping that Vegas comes back to life very fast. The more vaccines we get, the safer we get, the lower the numbers we get for COVID. We'll start to see, hopefully this summer, Vegas become back, because everyone I know, and literally everyone I know, has told me they're coming to Vegas. So sure. it's going to be an interesting summer if people are allowed to come back here to be a part of Vegas and be around, because the rates are cheap. It's quick and easy to get here. And boy, are they going to have some incentive offers to get people to come back to Vegas. So, all right, news and notes segment. We got a bunch to come. We'll talk about that Tiger Woods, what happened with Tiger, and the Genesis Invitational vehicle that he was driving. News and notes as well next year. It's Let's Talk Wheels on the Let's Talk Wheels Radio Network.
You're listening to the Let's Talk Wheels Radio Network. From the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, here's Matt Perrault and Mike Herzing.
It's Let's Talk Wheels here on the Let's Talk Wheels Radio Network. Time for our news and notes segment. Okay, so the big news, obviously, Mike, over the entire week was the car accident on Tuesday. Tiger Woods, at 7:12 in the morning, his vehicle left the road. It went careening into what was essentially a forest area where he was traveling. According to the news in Los Angeles that I was listening to, he was going at a pretty high rate of speed. They haven't confirmed, you know, they haven't said much about the speed, except he was going pretty fast. The police say he was not drunk. He was not under the influence. It was just in the morning. And it sounds like, up to this point in the time of taping here, it is an accident. It's just an accident.
Sure.
But from a Genesis perspective, the Genesis Invitational, why Tiger was there, that's the golf tournament that benefits his charity. That was the Genesis SUV. And so what does it say? Is it bad PR? I know you don't want to be involved in a story like this, but according to the police, the vehicle may have saved Tiger's life.
Well,
so
sure.
How does that go?
I don't know, but they'll know exactly how fast he was going. There's an event, called an EDR, that's in the computer, event data recorder. They'll know exactly how fast it went on. They'll know exactly what wheel locked up, what wheel didn't lock up, what safety features happened, at what speed. They'll know his altitude. They'll know exactly everything about the vehicle. Okay. That's all recorded.
Is that in every new car now?
That's in every car, period. It's been on every car for 15 or 20 years.
Okay. So how it's always been access to that. Do they just subpoena it?
No, Genesis will come in and check it out. You know, I had a friend one time that worked for GM, and they got sued one time because this guy with a Corvette said, I was just going through the on ramp and the car just slipped out from under me, and it shouldn't have done that. You know, I was only going 40, And the GM came back and said, well, wait a minute, as far as the event data recorder says, you were going 105. You know, oh. I'm like, oh, sorry, I can't, I don't remember that. You know, and then, yeah, it says here, and the tire started to spin, and you turn the wheel, you know, 65 degrees. And I'm, you know, like, okay, I didn't know it recorded all that. Oh, yeah, it did. So people don't understand. The computer remembers all of that. So that's, you know, that. Guess what? Big Brother's watching you all the time. And
if I'm hearing you right, they're going to be able to tell whether or not Tiger tried to hit the brakes.
Yes, they'll know all of that stuff.
Wow.
That's just how it is, you know, and it's all records, all that stuff. And that's all right. There's no big deal. It's a moot point. He wasn't, you know, under the influence or anything like that, but it's good to know. And they can use that data to enhance and make it better next time. Okay. I'm sure the vehicle has a yaw sensor. It has all these different sensors to make, you know, when your vehicle leans to one side and all that other stuff, it will apply brakes and change the suspension and make it repair, you know, recover. Okay. And so you don't understand that your vehicle, it keeps you from doing stupid things. And these vehicles will recover a lot of things. Just like your body, if you start to fall, your body will make different muscles will do different things and keep you from your body from falling. Okay. Your vehicle does the same thing. So this is an amazing vehicle, and it's really good the way they do it. And I'm sure Tiger would have been hurt a lot more, but also from what I hear, it tumbled. Okay. So yeah. Mm-hmm. it has 10 or 12 airbags. I'm sure he used all of them. Mm-hmm. He would have been probably, if you back up 20 years, I'm sure he would have been really, really hurt. I'm sure his arms were,
The police said he's lucky to be alive. So they said, right. You know, at these types of crashes, the driver doesn't survive. Normally, you right. don't walk away from it. He didn't walk away, but you don't come out of there, you know, alive. And that's like, I guess that was my point about bringing it up, because so Genesis, it's got the just, you know, the nameplate written all over the vehicle, and it's got the name of the golf tournament all over the vehicle. I mean, I'm not saying they'd use it as a PR campaign or a marketing campaign, but in some ways, you know, that vehicle is new on the market. You could say that vehicle saved his life, could you not?
Yeah, you could. But also, don't forget his. You remember how NASCAR they have the nets on the door, so that way when your arms don't fling out. Think about it. He didn't break his arms or anything, and they had to have been flinging out. You think about he didn't, you know, break his face or anything. So he lost some damage his legs because the engine got shoved back. But think about it. It's tumbling over end over end. You're probably doing 70 miles an hour and hitting trees. So my gosh, he's really lucky not to have broken arms, broken legs, sternum, all this other stuff to have. Yeah, he got some compound fractures and things like that. And okay, but he could have had spinal injuries and things like that. So he's really, really. They did really good. He was doing 40 and in 30. It's
right.
I mean, my gosh,
we don't really know how fast. I mean, as a time of tape, we don't know how fast he was going, but when I listened to the KCBS people who were up in the helicopter, you know, their experience with this, and they're just talking about the travel, the distance that Tiger had traveled off the road as to how fast he had to have been going to hit the curb, go airborne, tumble into the trees, and then finally come to rest. And the other thing, Tiger was wearing his seatbelt. So that's gigantic. He wasn't ejected from the vehicle, which could have caused all sorts of problems if he had been ejected. Right. So he stayed in the vehicle. Yeah, probably. So he stays in the vehicle. The airbags work. That's great. You know, the safety, the collapsing of the front end and the back ends on purpose. It's supposed to do that to absorb the energy and to stop a lot of the damage. So I mean, it's really interesting to see, you know, what happens next with Tiger in this story. But I think if you're Genesis, you know, you've talked about this with Hyundai and Kia for a long time about the safety features of these vehicles. Well, it just got put to a pretty big test. And I would say at least Tiger was hurt, but he survived. And I think for most people's sake, you look at the vehicle and you're like, how in the heck did you survive that? So,
yeah, kidding.
I'm not saying it's a good story for anyone, but at least the vehicle, they can state, look, you know, we told you this is a safe vehicle. We told you these are safety standards, and the roll cage and everything else that comes with the vehicle stayed intact. So that's, you know, it's a pretty significant deal and a pretty good deal. But let's kind of segue that, because it was a midsize SUV Tiger was driving, but there's some interesting news that's out about smaller cars. The headline is "Study Smaller Cars Maybe Why Crashes Injure Women More Often." And so, like, I think you hear that, and I think the first is kind of a recoil, right, Mike? You're kind of like, well, wait a minute. Like, yeah, come right. on. Like, the, but I think there might be something to this based upon the size of the vehicle. And you know, we talked about this a bit off air, but, you know, physics are physics, right? I mean, if I'm in, if I'm in a big truck and you're in, you know, a Porsche and we hit at going a certain rate of speed, who's going to win?
Yeah, well, the way it is. Well, but they always show these wrecks. This is from the Insurance Institute for Highway Safety. Somebody paid a lot of money for this, and I'm kind of wondering about that. But the, first of all, they say that more women drive, most women drive smaller cars. Okay, I can understand that. And most guys drive bigger cars. All right, I agree with that. And they're saying that whenever you see these crash tests and things, they always show cars running into barriers and things like that, and then the crash dummies, and okay, fine. And these vehicles, little tiny vehicles, are very safe. But if you're in a Mazda Miata sitting at a red light behind an F-150 and a Suburban slams in the back of you, you're not going to do well. It's not, the odds are not good in your favor. I'm sorry. You're in a Prius and somebody in, you know, a Ram 3500 smashes in the back of you. You're not, it's not going to end well for you. I don't care how safe, how many airbags you have. It's not going to do well. So I'm sure, I mean, just like if I, when my, Madeline is gets older, you're going to put her in, it's not going to put her in a Mazda Miata, are you?
No.
I mean, look, it's a bad vehicle. Don't get
me
wrong.
It's not a bad vehicle. It's just, it's a vehicle that, like we mentioned, it's, you know, again, you go up against someone in a larger truck. And when I drive those, when I get the chance to drive Miatas and I'm on the highway, I'm not gonna lie to you. There are times where my heart is a little bit, you know, skipping a beat or two because I'm between two big vehicles and I'm like, I don't like where I am right now.
Right.
I feel I'm driving at a high rate of speed and these two things are really big, whether it be a Mack truck or whether it be a, you know, an F-150 or a truck or something like that. So those are always the concerns that I have with just small sports cars are fun. But it's the Yaris's, it's the smart cars, it's the, I mean, I don't, my wife drove both of them. She once had a Yaris and a smart car. And I'm always like, what in the world were you thinking driving one of these things? Like she was driving, she's like, well, I lived in Boston and I need to get around quickly and I need to be able to park it easily. And I'm like, yep, that's fine. And then you get hit by a garbage truck and that's it.
Right.
You've got nothing.
If we're all going 40 miles an hour, it's okay. It's when we get to be 70, you know, it's 80. A different story.
Yeah. 70, 80, you know, the real rates of speed make it really difficult. And really, so it just makes sense to put more metal around your body, put you higher up on top of that. So you're able to see what's coming and maybe brace yourself or move the car out of the way, whatever it may be. So, I mean, it makes sense why SUVs are so popular. It makes sense why SUVs are, you know, everywhere. And it's not just the sport utility angle of it, but it's also the safety, the size, and just feeling more comfortable.
But also, don't forget, I think most people, if they're not in a small town like Boston, a town where it's crowded, okay?
Right.
If you can get – I'm driving this Suburban that gets 26 miles per gallon on the highway, okay? I would drive a Suburban if it gets 26 miles per gallon versus a, you know, smaller vehicle. I'm trying to think. As SUVs get better and better fuel economy, I would rather have a bigger vehicle. You follow me?
Yeah.
Okay. I mean, versus
as more hybrids come out. I mean, like my wife, our lease is up in August, and she's asking me different questions about, like, you know, what SUV hybrids are out there that actually are large and she can drive because she wants to drive an SUV. She's like, well, I want to drive a hybrid. And so, like, I'm looking around and, like, you know, most of the hybrids are small. Like there aren't very many big SUVs that are hybrids, which is kind of interesting, I'm learning a little bit about that. So it just seems to be that, like, that the mileage on these larger vehicles, as they start to improve and get better, I think you're right. More people are going to want to be like, wait a minute. Why, if I get 26 miles a gallon, then give me the bigger truck. Give me the bigger vehicle.
Right. Yeah. Well, there's that. But, you know, what's funny is as we're talking about hybrids and electric cars, Tesla just passed Audi, become the fourth largest luxury brand in the U.S. Isn't that crazy? And they're not that far behind Mercedes.
They're everywhere here.
Mercedes is three, you know.
It's crazy. They are everywhere here in Vegas. I see the SUV. I see the wings going up. There's just a wow factor with Lexus, sorry, with Teslas that you're not getting right now with the other luxury brands. And for a lot of people who have money and they want that wow factor, you drive up to a valet and you open up those wing tees and you step on out. Yeah. It gives you that oh my, and then the interior is gorgeous. The all the displays are gigantic. They're all touchscreen, and then the vehicle is just extremely quick. I mean, it's just
made in America too. Look at that.
Yeah, it scoots. It absolutely scoots.
Jaguar says they're going to go all electric. They're going to try to go all electric by 2025, and Land Rover right after that. How about that?
It's coming. Well, it's because of Tesla. Coming. Tesla's changing the game. Everybody's got to compete because what the consumers are buying. They're buying Teslas and they're buying them a lot. And here in Vegas, in Nevada, we build the batteries for a lot of these SUVs. So people feel comfortable buying it, saying it's local. It's, as you mentioned, it's made in America. So it's not a European vehicle. It's an American vehicle. So a lot of interest in these things. All right. Our automotive reviews come up on the other side. Then we got a conversation about the new Nissan Frontier with a rep from Nissan. Stick around. More to come. It's Let's Talk Wheels on the Let's Talk Wheels Radio Network.
You're listening to the Let's Talk Wheels Radio Network. From the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, here's Matt Perrault and Mike Herzing.
Guys, this week I was driving. I'm really excited about it. The 2021 Chevrolet Tahoe. Now, the one Tahoe I had was the Duramax diesel, which they brought over from the truck. This is the first diesel they've done in years. And I tell you what, it's really awesome. But first of all, let's talk about the Tahoe. The Tahoe is, you know, your full-size SUV, a little bit smaller than the Suburban. I didn't realize that Chevrolet has 45% of the large SUV market. That's a lot. And then actually, you've got the GMC, the Yukon, which is kind of its twin. That's got another 20%. So they have 65% of the market. And there's a good reason for it. These things for years have been called, you know, the state vehicle of Texas. And if you ever owned one, they're big, they're roomy, they're great. This one here will tow 8,000 pounds. You can get them where they'll tow up to 8,500 pounds, 8,400 pounds, excuse me. You can get it up to 420 horsepower V8, the whole bit. But this one, the diesel, is the most, I don't know, I really like it. It's just a great powertrain. I drove back from East Texas, and I slowed down to 70, 75, which is where the speed limit keeps going back and forth. 26 miles to gallon. You know, it's crazy. It says here it's rated at 28, and I'm sure if I had slowed down just a little bit to 60, 65, I could easily get 28. The engine's running about, I think it's 75, but it's run about 1,400, 1,500 RPMs. It's just amazing. Now, it says here it gets 21 city. I think I got about 20, 24 average. It's about right. It's nice. These things had tons of torque, tons of power. Really quiet. One of those diesels you don't have to turn off the engine to go to a drive-through, things like that. But the vehicle is nice. You know, when they redesigned it, which is just this year, the Tahoe has got 60% more room in it. It's got especially 60% more room behind the back seat. It's got the hump for the rear axle because they went to independent rear suspension is gone. There's tons of leg room for the third row. It's actually can put a human back there, which is not many of them. Can you do that? That's great. The seats all fold down. You know, it's seat 7 or 8, whichever way you want to set it up. It's quiet. It's comfortable on the highway. This thing is a beast on the highway. It just cruises. You can get it with magnetic ride control. You can get the air ride adaptive suspension. It has load leveling. So, you know, you've got the mother-in-law in the back seat, makes the whole vehicle lean. Just kidding. That will make it, you know, a little even it all out. You can set your ride height. You can drop it down. It would go get in. You can have it kneel down. And for people that have trouble getting up into vehicles, it's nice. You can get a big 10-inch. You can get a 15-inch heads-up display. That's huge. Nobody has that. I think mine had the 10-inch display, color diagonal touchscreen. Really good. It's got OnStar. It's got all the goodies you had. This thing had rear seat LCD displays for the kids and the rear seat media system. You know, these things now, they're all sell for over $60,000, and that's okay. I've seen these things with 350, 400,000 miles on them. When I had my shop customers to come in all the time with 350, 400,000 miles, and they're still running. This Duramax would even be more fun. It's got a 10-speed transmission. It's got 9 camera views all around there for trailering, and you can help for, you know, this is not the biggest of Suburban, but it's still pretty big. Not everybody's used to that. You can have all these things for backing up and parking and things like that around view cameras. That is really handy. It's just, you know, it's got adaptive cruise control. It's got the lane centering. It's got lane divergence. It's got, you know, the crash mitigation. It's got, you know, backup protection and cross traffic alert. It's got all the goodies. You know, it really is. This thing is, it's hard to beat. It's got a 5-year, 100,000 mile powertrain warranty. That's pretty cool. But it's just 9-speaker Bose audio system. You can get it more than that. It has nice remote start. The cool thing on, we've had this horrible freeze here in Texas, and I can hit the remote start, starts right up. It already turns on the seat heaters. It warms up the steering wheel. It warms up the interior, so I can walk out there and there you go. And that is so handy when it's freezing cold and the windshield's frozen and things like that. Like I said, this is the best riding Tahoe. This is the best, you know, everything. Tahoes came out in 1995. They've been around forever. You know, a lot of them you'll see as police cars pulling you over. But tell you what, if you haven't checked out the new Tahoe, the new design Tahoe, you're crazy. You need to go check it out because it gets great fuel economy. Even the standard with the gas engine, I've gotten 23 miles per gallon on it. Really, they're big, they're comfortable, they're nice. You've got to check out the new Tahoe. Folks, this week I was driving the 2021 Buick Enclave, the Avenir trim level, top of the food chain, front wheel drive, nice vehicle. You know, since I was a kid, Buick has always meant elegance, beauty, luxury, power, quiet on the highway. This is exactly what this vehicle is. Now, the Avenir version is like their top of the line there, and it has a little bit different grill and a different front end and things like that, so you can really tell. But one thing you always see is a nice big round Buick badge. Really cool. 20-inch wheels in this thing, nice V6 in it, plenty of power, you know, 3.6-liter V6, got a 9-speed transmission. If you really care about it, it gets 26 on the highway, 18 miles per gallon city for a 21 average. I think I averaged about 20, and I drove it like I stole it. Really nice vehicle. It's laid out very nice, leather-wrapped seats. The seats are so comfortable, and it's got massagers, and it's got heated and cooled seats, and it's got everything else. And it just, this is a vehicle, if you want to take a trip, and you're cruising along, you get where you're at, and you're not tired, you're not beat up. You can carry a nice conversation without raising your voice at 75 miles an hour. It's everything's easily within reach on the center stack and all the dash and everything. It's configurable and all the typical GM kind of stuff. You know, the third row seats, generally, they're not really good for a whole lot except for kids and certain people that are not real big, you know, want to carry them very long, but it's nice to fold them down, have plenty of room in it. This thing's got a ginormous sunroof. It's like actually 2 sunroofs, to be honest with you. And it's just very open and airy. It has all the technology, every one. It's got every safety feature, and it's got forward collision alert, rear traffic alarm, lane keeping assistance, blind spot detection. It has all of the adaptive cruise control. It's got every Bluetooth port, wireless phone charger, satellite radio. It's got OnStar. It's got, you know, a nice 8-inch screen. This is, you know, all these cars like this are loaded with everything. 310 horsepower, plenty of power. These things start out at 53,000. You can load it up. This thing's loaded up to about 55. And it's about right. You know, it's got the rear camera mirror, which is, I love that. It's got a telescoping wheel, you know, auto heated steering wheel all by itself, you know, when it wants to, you know, that's kind of nice. But, and plenty, like I said, it's running great. It's fun to drive. You look up and you're there. Got an awesome audio system, but you know, it's, the big wheels, the big wheel openings. It just looks good. You know, a Buick versus the, like maybe the Chevy Traverse or the GMC Terrain will have a little bit bigger mirrors just to be a little bit quieter, maybe a little bit more, you know, not so pushy, a little elegant. And it's something to think about that. I would buy this in a minute. The brakes are good. The steering's good. The drive's good. But it has all of the USB ports and 120-volt charging thing and, you know, it, great. This Bose Premium Audio System, I just can't quit talking about that. And maybe you notice it more because the vehicle's so quiet.
You're listening to the Let's Talk Wheels Radio Network. From the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, here's Matt Perrault and Mike Herzing.
Welcome back, folks, to Let's Talk Wheels. I'm Mike Herzing along with Matt Perrault. Today, guess what? As we talked about earlier in the show, we got Derek Tackett, who is from on the phone from Nashville, Tennessee, and he's the Nissan Frontier Marketing Manager. He's going to talk about one of my favorite vehicles, the new Nissan Frontier. And I tell you what, guys, this is they have done a good job on this sucker. You know, the old Frontier was a little bit long in the tooth, although it was one of my favorite vehicles. And by the time they had gotten around there, there was nothing wrong with that sucker. It was really neat. Tell you what, welcome to Let's Talk Wheels, Derek.
Hey, Mike, glad to be here. How are you, sir?
Man, we are living the dream. It's finally warmed up here in Houston. It was 80 degrees this week. Tell you what, you guys have done a great job of the thing. It looks really good. I can't wait to drive it. Tell us kind of what's gone into all those big changes.
So there's a lot new to the Frontier, almost everything, to be honest with you. You know, the vehicle's 17 years in the making. We're very proud of it. You know, it does have an all-new 3.8-liter direct-injected V6. With a best-in-class rating of 310 horsepower with 281 feet-pound of torque, and it is paired with our new advanced 9-speed automatic transmission. That's under the hood, right? But in terms of the actual truck itself, I mean, you've seen it, Mike. It's night and day from our current generation Frontier.
Well, you know, that could be good. It could be bad. I really like the old one, but, you know, it was time. It looks a little bit like the Titan in a way, which I really like, and it was due. I mean, it looks kind of as good, if not better, than all the competition.
Yeah, I do think that it does have some features from the Titan. I think it reminds me of a little baby Titan Warrior, much more modern, much more aggressive.
Well, you know, you're right. It is much more aggressive. You got that big, you know, massive front end, and how much bigger inside is it?
So the actual truck itself, believe it or not, is still right size. So from a wheelbase standpoint, Same length. It's actually a little bit longer due to some safety tech that was needed, but it's really the same size as the current generation, if you can believe that. It's a little bit taller, but length and width are the same. So we thought that was important from a right size standpoint with midsize pickup. You know, we want this thing to be capable off-road, but also be agile in the city.
So is this actually smaller than the Ford or some of the other midsize trucks that really aren't midsize?
It's a little bit taller. It's tallest in segment, but yes, it's from a length and width standpoint, a little bit smaller inch-wise.
You know, that's what some of the people's problem. A lot of people say, that, well, this midsize truck, you know, it isn't a midsize truck.
You're right. They've kind of bloated, if you will. You know, I think that a lot of the midsize pickup trucks out there today from an industry standpoint look like the old full-size pickup trucks, right?
Oh, you're absolutely right, 1,000%. But, you know, but they've also... And also, the price-wise is nothing. It's like you can buy a Chevy Colorado, and it's really not any cheaper than the Silverado. And the fuel economy is not any different.
Yeah, you're right there. You know, our fuel economy is a big thing here. We wanted to stay basically at the same level as 21 with potential for improvement. We're waiting on final fuel results, EPA-wise. But, yeah, you're right. I mean, the segment has certainly changed.
You know, you're exactly right. But I noticed the interior is dramatic. I mean, last year you really bumped up your game on the Titan interior. It's really nice as anything on the market now for the Titan. And I really appreciated that. You bumped up the fuel economy. I've become a real fan of the Titan. But, you know, it was time to change the Frontier. It really was. And now it looks, from the looks, I've only seen pictures, it looks like you've really upgraded the interior.
Yeah, night and day difference, Mike. You know, it's modern now. You know, I hate to say it, but I think that you may have made the point earlier, but the Frontier was a little long in the tooth, so that wasn't left on the interior. I mean, the interior was a little bit ancient, we were feeling and hearing. So now it's completely different. It's aggressive new interior. You know, basically there's a lot of versatility, high visual impact, yet still rugged from a functionality standpoint. You know, we want the interior to be the tool that kind of unlocks your adventure with this truck. So there's an available 9-inch LED touchscreen with Apple CarPlay and Android Auto. We really view this as something to aid you on the trails as you go find your next adventure. And also new to this is an around view monitor, which we have on a lot of our models, but this has an off-road mode, which you may have read about, Mike, that actually gives you a visual to your front passenger side tire. So if you're doing canyon crawls or anything of that nature, you'll actually be able to see, you know, where that wheel is, you know, as opposed to needing a spotter or something of that sort.
You know, I know that pretty cool. That's one of my favorite things, and the round view that you guys have, a bird's eye view, or whatever you guys call it, is really cool. And on all of your safety shield and all that good stuff that you guys have is just some of your favorite features. But honest to God, one of my favorite features that you guys have, and I know it's a goofy little thing, is when you air up the tires that it honks the horn.
It's great, isn't it? Especially the first time you use it.
That is the coolest thing. And I'm like, why doesn't everybody do this? You don't have to carry a pressure gauge all over the place.
Yeah, I'm not too old, but I remember pressure gauges, and you know, I remember the first time, I think it was an Altima I had that had that feature on it, and you know, I didn't know it at the time. I was in a different position, and it kind of scared me a bit. You know, I was like, "What is somebody is somebody beeping at me?" You know, hold on.
You know, that's just, I know it's a little thing, and it's just that, and the round view monitor. Like, did I park in, you know, over in the lane? Did I do this or do that? Especially if you're in an Armada, if you're in something like that. You know, the other day I was looking at specs on the Armada. And I didn't realize how big, you know, it's got almost 10% of the full-size SUV market. And I just realized, I was just blown away that it's, you know, it's right behind the GMC Yukon in the market. I was like, wow, I mean, it's got a big chunk of the market.
Yeah, and I'm sure the tech has something to do with that. I mean, you know, the thing with the Safety Shield 360 and all the tech is, you know, it's there when you need it, you know. And I think that anyone that's used to it, it almost becomes something that you expect and really can appreciate.
Well, you know, when you had the Frontier and it was up in J.D. Powers and everybody's, you know, reliability, because you made it so many years, anything that broke, you just fixed the problem. And that's one of the cool things about not changing your vehicle very much. And the other time, people still will kind of whine about the fact that it hasn't changed. And so it's a double-edged sword. Is there anything from the old vehicle that you used?
You will see Utilitrack still, Mike, the Utilitrack channel system in the bed. We just had a lot of very positive feedback about the capabilities of that system. So that will return, as well as the spray and bed liner. You know, aside from that, I mean, you know, this is completely changed. You know, this truck is not the same truck anymore. We still have the good value story. We want to have a great value story for our customers because we know how important that is, and pairing that with the right safety and the right tech. But not a lot of carryover from current generation.
Wow, I mean, the frame was a really good frame and all that good stuff. So, wow, that's really amazing. Do you have any idea on the pricing yet at all?
The one thing I will say, the ladder frame is the same, the Floyd Box frame, so that hasn't changed. Sorry, I misunderstood you there. But from a pricing standpoint, right now it's still under the works, but we want to make sure it's competitive and in line with the segment.
Well, I'm glad you said the frame because I really thought the frame was really, really beefy, and I'm glad you didn't change that.
Yes.
That was the one thing I was hoping you didn't change.
Yes, sir.
And as far as power plants, it's just that 3.8, which I think is a great engine.
Yes, sir. The 3.8 V6 right now is the one power plant available on the 22 Frontier.
At some point,
which we'll have, like I said,
probably will go to a hybrid or something like that. I think everybody's going to have to do that at some point.
Yeah, it seems like the industry in general is headed in the way of electric. In terms of the all new 22 Frontier, right now it's just the one power plant. You know, the V6. That's our plan for today. You know, we'll see what the future holds, but right now at launch, that will be the power plant, and that's the plan as of now.
Now, are they going to have a regular cab or just extra cab or king cab and crew cab?
King cab and crew cab, 4x2 and 4x4.
I'm sure you're not old enough, but I remember when Datsun came out with the 620 king cab. In the 70s, I was working at a Datsun dealer, and it was everybody came out, and everybody, they just turned the market on its head when that happened.
Yeah, I believe that King Cab story is due to one of our old VPs in the truck and wanting a little bit more room in the front seat. It's a pretty crazy story, but his last name was King. I don't know if too many people know about that, but I do not remember when that truck came out. You're right, but we have one sitting in our Lane Museum in Nashville, so I've taken that tour and some good stories there. But you're right, that changed the industry. I think the heritage is here with this truck, you know, so we really want to, you know, hone in on that. You know, this is, to us, a re-imaged version of the Nissan Hardbody in general, which, as you know, is one of our most rugged, popular, and, you know, competition-winning trucks ever. You know, when you think of Desert Runner and everything that entails.
Oh, man, the 620 and 720 trucks, you couldn't kill those suckers. And my brother had, an 89 Hardbody and he sold it to a landscaper friend of ours, and it had 365,000 miles when he sold it. And the landscaper used it for another 6 years. And last I saw it had 495 on it, and everything was original. I think he put a clutch in it. But it was a beast.
We love stories like that. And I mean, I think that, you know, we've shown with our JD Power Awards in the past, with our dependability, and, you know, I'm sure you've seen the Million Mile Frontier with Mr. Murphy. That was a great, great story. You know, to think that a truck had one customer at that put a million miles on the Frontier. So to your point, I mean, you know, we're known to have a dependable vehicle and a very reliable rebel of sorts is kind of where we're going with this truck. And, you know, we don't want to lose sight of that heritage because it's so important.
No, you're exactly right. Now, are they going to do anything with, you know, anything? When's this going to really be on the market?
Late summer.
Late summer. Okay. Now, is this going to be also just an automatic, or are they maybe going to still do a manual?
No manual is planned, Mike, at this time. You know, we know that there is a niche group that really is into manual transmissions, but there's not, believe it or not, the percentage of sales is a little bit too low to make a business case for it for us.
No, so I no plans that. For a manual. Mainly the manual is the people like do delivery trucks, and you know, I can go to O'Reilly's and they'll have five Nissan trucks out there, the delivery trucks, and each of them will have 250,000 miles on them.
Right. Yep.
And they just
right now
just,
only an automatic.
They just hold up and they don't do anything but oil changes on them. Some of them might have a set of plugs put in them, and that's about it.
Yes, sir. I've seen them.
You've seen them. How long have you been doing this with this company?
I've been at Nissan for 14 years. You know, so it's been right out of college. I started in consumer affairs, believe it or not. So I've worked here ever since. I've worn a lot of different hats. You know, I spent some time in the field calling on dealerships as a dealer ops manager. So, you know, I feel or I hope that I'm in tune with what they kind of expect and how they perceive the customer. And now I'm in CMM. You know, I had some stints in dealer network development and a couple other positions. But CMM is what I'm really passionate about because it's about coming out with good product and providing our customer with a good experience, which I think is above all our number one goal with this all new 22 Frontier.
I've seen people that were in college driving these things, high school kids. I've seen seniors pulling them. I've seen they're behind motorhomes. I've seen people that just, but the Frontier owners to a T, they all love them.
Yeah, I like seeing people around here. You know, I'm right outside of Smyrna, very close to the plant. So I see a lot of Frontiers, as you can imagine. And it's always great to talk to Frontier customers. I don't always tell them that I work on it just because I want to just get their unsolicited feedback on the truck. But you're right. I mean, everybody loves it. I mean, the demographic, obviously, it falls in line with where the segment is in terms of who our buyer is. But still, you're right. I see a lot of young kids around here in them, and, you know, as well as your older guys, a lot of female drivers. I mean, it's a run of everyone here in Tennessee, at least. And I'm sure you see something similar in Texas.
Yep. Hey, Derek, we're out of time. Thanks for joining us today.
Hey, Mike, thank you very much, sir. Stay safe down there, and I hope that the storm's past you. Nothing but sunshine ahead.
All right, folks, that was Derek Tackett from our friends at Nissan. Don't go away. More to come, including our weekly car segment with Jeremy Barenbaum from Classic.com. All of it right here on the Let's Talk Wheels radio network.
You're listening to the Let's Talk Wheels radio network. From the O'Reilly Auto Parts studios, here's Matt Perrault and Mike Herzing.
Let's Talk Wheels on the Let's Talk Wheels Radio Network. Mike Herzing, Matt Perrault. We didn't get to this in the news notes segment. You might kind of touched on it a little bit about Jaguar deciding to go and Land Rover going to all electric vehicles. We've kind of talked about this a lot throughout the entire, you know, weeks here on Let's Talk Wheels. But, you know, what do you make of this new commitment in kind of like General Motors saying 2035, they want to be, they're aspiring to be all electric. I mean, are we going to see, did you think that's realistic?
No, not really, but they're going to try to be. I mean, it's a goal, you know, and it's, and, you know, I think they're going to come close. I really do. They might make it, but you know, that's, there's still a good place for the internal combustion engine. It'll be better. I think a better thing would be hybrids. And as a matter of fact, even if they made it, I don't think the infrastructure is going to be there for charging. I think that's going to hold them back a lot. I mean, it's,
well, that's the thing though. It's up to the power companies, right?
Yeah. And that's the big falling down we had here with the freezing of all the windmills and the way that went down the toilet during our freeze last week.
The power plants froze.
Well, the power plants, all the windmills froze, all the solar stuff just went down the toilet. So
how do you guys not winterize? That's the thing that just drives me crazy. How do you not winterize?
Think about that. What do they de-ice it? What do they de-ice it with? Solvents. Okay, wait a minute. How green is that?
Well, I mean,
have a helicopter.
Yeah, but we de-ice planes with no problem. We do that all the time.
Yeah, but how green is that? Using fossil fuels to do that? Come on.
Yeah, but it's once in a while, though. I mean, Logan Airport in Boston's next to the airport, and we de-iced like crazy. I mean, it's just,
I know.
Once
They're
in
idiots.
A while, you got to do it. I mean, my gosh, it's just, I can't believe that actually happened. That was like,
they're idiots. What can I say? You know,
put you guys in a real big bind. It was a bummer to see that for sure.
Really,
we're learning. I mean, unfortunately, we got to learn lessons the hard way, and that was one of those lessons that you got to learn the hard way about winterizing your power grid and making sure that you can keep the lights on during the cold.
Especially that West Texas part. That part of West Texas gets really cold when the wind blows. Oh my gosh! And it's just iced up like nuts. I mean, it's crazy, and they just got to prepare those kind of winter storms.
Yeah. All right. Next week, same place, same time. It's Let's Talk Wheels right here on the Let's Talk Wheels Radio Network.
Welcome, everybody, to Let's Talk Wheels Classic Car segment. As usual, we have our resident classic car guru, Jeremy Bierenbaum from Classic.com. Jeremy, how crazy been in L.A. this week?
Oh, it's been so crazy, you know, but with the nice weather, it makes some time to drive a cool car and not stress so much.
Well, I hate the classic car weather and the fact that it was nice and cool. I mean, I just it's been freezing cold here, 9 degrees 1 week, and the next week it's 80.
Yeah, I'm glad to hear you guys have finally thawed out a little bit.
No kidding. But, you know, I put my alternator on my 58 F100, and I got it from the folks at Speedway Motors. It bolted right on. And it works great and much better than the generator, which at idle obviously doesn't charge, but this one works great.
Oh, no, that's awesome. I mean, those are the little bits that you want to do to a classic car to kind of modernize it because running on a generator is a little bit tougher.
You know, the generators were wonderful back in the 50s, but, you know, the loads, electrical loads and stuff, especially if you want to add an AC at some point, it really needs more than that.
Yeah, add AC, possibly a radio, you know. And I think it's just going to run better. You're not going to have to worry about dead battery as often. And like you said, when you're sitting at lights, you're going to idle easier.
You know, your battery voltage drops. And so I really don't want that to happen because the ignition is crappy as it is. I don't want it to be crappier.
Yeah, correct. And so I think that's the right move. And like, you can always keep your generator, but for the most part, I don't think anyone's too interested in it over the life of the car, unless it's something super rare, you know, pre-war era, where that generator is actually worth it on that car.
You know, you're exactly right. I'm not taking every nut and bolt I take off that car. I am saving. But let's talk about their site. I know the site is gathering a lot of traction with all of your cars for sale. You got some great stuff. But let's talk about some of that.
Yeah, we got some really good cars on our website, but I kind of wanted to touch on the pre-purchase inspection that is included with every car that's on our site right now. And, you know, whether you're looking to buy a classic car from Classic or on your own, a pre-purchase inspection is something that you can get done by a third-party company. I know you mentioned that you have a friend, Mike, that does them. And, you know, depending on what area you are in, it's easier to find someone like in L.A. or Texas, New York. But all across the country, you know, we use a company called Car Doctor who will send someone out. They'll do a very thorough inspection of the car. They'll take pictures of any issues of that they see, and they'll put it all in a nice formatted report for you to look at. You know, if you're doing it from a third-party person outside of Classic, you can get on the phone, you can talk to them, they'll give you a little bit of a rundown. And you get people that have bought Classic cars previously or new people to the hobby. I think that getting a pre-purchase inspection kind of works for anyone. It's really nice to just have an extra pair of eyes on the car, and sometimes they find things that you don't find.
Well, you know, if you'd say if it costs $400 or $500 or something for a pre-purchase, a good pre-purchase inspection, would it be that's cheaper than flying to Michigan and or whatever and then looking at something you may not know anything about, right?
Flying to Michigan, getting a hotel, driving, all that. You know, some people like doing that. It's an experience. It's fun, especially if it's, you know, your first classic car, or you want to drive it back across the country. But for, you know, for other people that don't have the knowledge or the time to get someone out there to look at your car and say, hey, you know, this is what your car needs. And they're not trying to pick it apart or say, hey, this is a bad car, you shouldn't buy it. But what they are trying to tell you is what you're getting into before you get into it. And I think that's what everyone wants to know. And of course, no one has a magic crystal ball and can see in the motor or knows what has happened to your car fully, but getting another expert to put their eyes on the car and say, hey, do you know that the power steering pump is leaking? Or, you know, they check the fluids. And when you check the fluids, that's a good sign of just how well the previous owner has kept the car. Or do the fluids look good? Or are they at the right level? So, you know, going through all these steps gives you a better idea of what you're purchasing.
No kidding. You're exactly right. I mean, when's the last time? I mean, I've got people that with new cars that have never, ever checked their oil. They just take it in every 5,000 or 6,000 or 7,000 miles and get it changed. They don't even know how to do it. And same thing with classic cars, people that have just never checked the stuff.
You know, there are some people that live by the motto, if it's not broken, don't fix it. And so, you know, you just want to make sure what you're getting, because with these classic cars, you know, there can be some hidden things that are wrong. And then, you know, all of a sudden you have to put more time and money into a car that you thought was going to be ready to go.
No, you're right. And what are the, is there, you and I were talking the other day about, I may put my truck on the market just to see what it's worth. And you were thinking, well, maybe I ought to wait because it's April or May would be a better time. Are there really better times to put a car on the market?
Yeah, I think there definitely is. I mean, if you look at what the country is right now, there are a lot of states that are socked in through winter and snow. And that's not to say people in those states don't buy cars. They don't drive their cars, whatever. But it definitely slows down the market. And, you know, when it's summertime and it's really nice and the days are longer, people are out cruising and they have that bigger desire. Oh, I want to get a classic car. I want to, you know, you know, at the beginning of New Year's, everyone wants to go to the gym. Gym memberships are up like crazy because all of a sudden everyone's got their New Year's resolution. It's kind of the same thing.
Yeah, as a matter of fact, I did some research and gym memberships dropped by 80% by the end of February.
Yeah. So I'm not saying that they drop, but, you know, there's better times, you know, when people have a convertible car and they want to drive it. The winter time is not really that time, so it's in their garage. They're not really thinking about it. But come summertime, oh, I wish I had that convertible right now, right?
No, you're exactly right. And then, of course, middle of the summer in August, people in Texas aren't going to be driving their classic cars unless they have an air conditioner.
Yeah, exactly. You know, we run into the same problem in California, but, you know, for a lot of people, they just deal with it.
You know, you're right. Of course, the summer in California isn't quite as bad as the summer here in Texas or Arizona.
I don't know. I think we could give you guys a run for your money. I'm sure we both have that experience of sitting on that hot black leather seat with the back of your, you know, your back getting all sweaty and whatnot. But you roll down the windows and it's kind of I'm not going to say enjoyable, but it's a different step. You know, you're not like you're wearing your business suit going to work.
No, you're absolutely right. Now, what's selling on the site right now?
Right now, we have some really cool cars. We have this Jeep Gladiator J20 that I really like. It's like a green, and if you go and read the review on it, or not the review, but the write-up on it, this car has had every nut and bolt replaced. It's got a crate motor. We also have a really beautiful 66 Cadillac convertible. It's an Eldorado. I'm trying to think off the top of my head right now. I don't have our website pulled up, but there's some really cool cars right now. Every week we're adding more. That's the biggest thing. So if there's not something you guys see this week, by next week we already have a new crop of cars coming online. And if there's a car that you're looking for, you can always drop me a line or Mike a line and say, hey, I'm looking for X, Y, or Z, and we can try and help find you one of those.
That's right, folks. CLASIQ.com is the place to be, right, Jeremy?
That is the place to be. I appreciate you having me on today.
All right, guys. Thanks for joining the podcast today. If you have a car question, info@letstalkwheels.com. You can also find Jeremy at jeremy@classicclasiq.com. And we will always work to get everybody an answer. This is a short podcast today, but it's been a crazy week. And remember, you can find us on our website, letstalkwheels.com, on Facebook. You can also find us, go to classiq.com, look at the content, classic content. You can find this podcast. I can tell your friends about the podcast. If you have any friends, I don't. Jeremy doesn't, has a few. We'd really like to appreciate you doing it. On behalf of Matt Perrault, Jeremy Barenbaum, our wonderful, badass producer Jack McCraw, and myself, want to thank everybody for joining us today on the Let's Talk Wheels podcast. Mike Herzing, as always, happy motoring.